that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
What's going on, people? Welcome to Pain Points, a Tanner Supers podcast, proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Network. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. You can find me on Twitter at Jake Painting, JakePaintING. You can find all of my written work over at Tanner Supers, and you can find my guest's written work over at Tanner Supers, Jack Borman. What's going on, Jack?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. It's all, you know, getting back into the swing of things now. We've been talking hoops for a while. We're watching hoops. We're, you know, betting on hoops. So everything is getting back to normal when it comes to NBA, except the fact that they're in a bubble. But it's better than nothing. So how have you felt? You know, have you found the first few days of ball?
You know, hearing Mike Breen yell "bang" after after a made three was great. Hearing Doris Burke call games is sweet too, and Kevin Harlan's just insane enthusiasm and love for everything he does is awesome, and it's incredible to just be able to watch live basketball again and see these guys still playing at such a high level despite the circumstances of everything, and being able to watch baseball too, and the WNBA has just been awesome. Just being able to consume live sports as much of it as I can has been so needed after, you know, four months of pretty much no sports. So
yeah, it's been such a long layoff, and obviously, you know, the world hasn't really recovered from, you know, COVID and the things that have put sport on hold, but it's really nice to have some sort of distraction from all the depressing, you know, things outside our windows. So I'm stoked to have basketball back. I think as we're speaking right now, James Harden has like 25 points in the first quarter. So,
and he hasn't missed a shot, I don't think.
Yeah, so, you know, regular scheduling has resumed. And, you know, I'm pretty keen for that. But today, we're going to do our second part of the This or That prospects. So we did the first part a couple of weeks ago, pretty much just choosing between two upcoming draft prospects, pitting them together, choosing which one we'd rather have for Minnesota, and kind of just digging into their games a little bit. So the first pairing we've got is Xavier Tillman from Michigan State, big man from Michigan State, or Killian Tilly, the Gonzaga Bulldog, who is also a big man. So what are you thinking on them two?
So the first thing that comes to my mind are guys that you'd love to have on your basketball team in any capacity.
Yeah.
And both guys are absolutely exceptional on the offensive side of the floor because they're both so versatile. They can play with just about anybody else around them. They can, you know, they're really smart with the ball in their hands. They always make the right reads and plays if they're not looking to score, or even if they get the ball. Neither of them puts the ball in the deck immediately or you know, gives away what they're doing immediately. They keep all their options open, and they're both really, really smart with the ball in their hands. And both are just really, really versatile on the offensive side of the floor. They can score at all three levels. I think Tilly obviously is a much better scorer than Tillman is, but I think Tillman is a better facilitator and playmaker in the high posts, on the pick and roll, on the short rolls, and even in passing short rolls to other bigs. Tillman really stands out there as well. It's really tough to try and choose between the two, and ultimately, right, I think Tilly has a higher floor and the NBA, a higher ceiling at the NBA level, just because he has so many translatable skills from his shooting to his post game to, you know, his passing out of the post. I mean, there's so many different things that he does well. But his health is just a huge red flag. And just with how physical the NBA game is, especially if he's going to be a guy that would have to be a small ball five at the next level.
Which I think he would be.
Yeah, I think it might be tough for him to stay healthy. And I think ultimately because of that, I would probably rather take Xavier Tillman for the Wolves, especially just because I like what he does on defense a little bit more than Tilly, just because Tillman's really smart on that end of the floor. He's got great timing with his hands, his jumps, and he's able to stay straight up a lot, which I appreciate a lot from a guy who generally was an undersized five at Michigan State. So I'd probably go Tillman here, but it's really close. And if you could promise me that Tilly would stay healthy, I think that would be enough to swing it for me.
Yeah, it's the health is the thing. Like I did choose Tilly, but every time I think about the health, it's kind of like, do I see him being in the NBA for 10 years? I mean, he struggled to get through 4 years of college, you know, without multiple leg, ankle, foot injuries. And that's a pretty big red flag for a guy who's, you know, 6'10", 6'11". Obviously, like you said, I think they have a lot of similarities in the fact that they're just solid all-round players. Like, Tilly obviously has the shooting that Tillman doesn't have. I trust him to be a 40% shooter at the NBA.
Oh, 100%.
His stroke is so nice. Tillman, better defender, like you said. Amazing short roll passer. I think probably the best in the class, especially for a big at least. I think they're both definitely... I'm not sure if either of them are anything other than low-end starters, but I think they could be really valuable low-end starters. I mean, being a low-end starter doesn't always mean you're not a really good player, and I think both of these guys could be really good players on good teams. This is one of them picks where I have Tillman higher in my overall draft board, but I think I choose Tilly just because he fits Minnesota a little bit better with his ability to spread the floor and shoot threes. I mean, Tilly right. and Towns next to each other, who can both shoot, both pass, both post up, that'd be an awesome twin tail pairing.
Yeah, and I think too, because I like Tilly over a guy like Wancho, and the reason why I say that is just because Tilly is he's got a lot of meat on the bone. I mean, he's 220 pounds. And he plays probably a little bit bigger than that just because he's filled out really nicely, and doesn't have, you know, doesn't really give up a ton of ground when he gets guarded by, or excuse me, when he's guarding a true center that's a legit big guy.
He's really strong in the hips and in the upper body.
Right, which is important, I think, for a guy who, you know, would probably spend time guarding legit fives at the next level. So, it'll just be really interesting to see if he can stay healthy and you know, if he's a guy that maybe the Timberwolves look at 33 as a, you know, just a really skilled guy that they just say, hey, I'm going to take a bet on a really skilled guy, which I think is going to be important because with, you know, getting married to the idea of Russell and Towns, you're not and you know, potentially foregoing a ton of different draft picks to try and go get Devin Booker if that ever, you know, comes to fruition. Having guys like Tilly who are really skilled that can produce for you on a nightly basis on a really cheap contract would be crucial.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I know you've spoken about this before, but he's one of them guys who are just synergy superstars in college. So he, like, I've got it here in front of me.
Yeah.
75th percentile in spot ups, 92nd percentile as a pick and roll man, 94th percentile in post ups, 66th percentile on cuts, 96th percentile in transition, which is kind of surprising because he's a bit of a lumbering guy. But once he gets going, you know, down the lane or running in transition, he's actually quite athletic, which is.
He's got good touch, yeah.
Yeah, and he's surprising since he's dealt with so many injuries to his lower body. And then 81st percentile on putback. So pretty much he's one of the best college players, you know, in the country. I think this season he probably would have been, you know, close to the lottery pick in the last two seasons if he had been able to stay healthy. But now, 4 years in with, you know, a myriad of injuries, it's got hard to predict, whether he'll ever be able to play a long-term role, and I guess that's what's going to scare teams off into the 30s or the 40s. But like you said, I'd take a swing at him at 33. Even if you play him as a backup five, like, I think he's better than Naz Reid. And I think...
Yeah, I think so.
I think if he's playing 15 to 20 minutes a night, maybe that preserves his body for a little bit longer. So, yeah, I really like Tilly. I love Tillman as well. I just think Tilly probably fits Minnesota a smidge more.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I just think, too, that, you know, Tilly's ability to finish around the basket on non-post-ups, too, as a cross-key flasher, are really key, too, and something that I think would be really important, especially playing off a guy like Towns on the perimeter, would be something that would be really interesting, and I think fits that mold of kind of what they're looking for from an offensive standpoint from a four. Now that I kind of think about it, I might be right there with you taking Tilly.
And just on that point of like the cross key kind of cutting and flashing, the way he cuts up and then can pass high low is one of the most intriguing and kind of unique skill sets that I've seen in the draft this season, just because he is a ridiculously good high low passer. He doesn't have the touch on the short roll passing that Tillman does. I mean, he's still really good. He's just got really good vision and passing nous in general, but his high low passing, which the Zags run a ton.
Yeah, especially with having Petrušev too.
Yeah, and they really hammered that play. So, and they loved using Tilly at the top of the key or at the, you know, high post area. But I could see that working with Towns, just because it's always so hard to get a post up for Towns, just because the defense is cheating on him all the time. So right. That's the kind of play I'd like to see. You know, like if they got Tilly or they got another big, even, you know, they played two bigs together, which it's, you know, unknown whether they'll ever do that. But that's the kind of thing I'd like to see, to kind of get Tilly involved, get Towns involved. You can get him at the top of the key. If they want to double off him, that probably becomes a spot up, like a spot up three. And if they play him tough, then he can get that high low pass into Towns, and that's a bucket.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's awesome. It'd be such a welcome sight, just because Wancho isn't really a guy that can pass, and James Johnson I think is. I think it'd be really interesting to see those guys play together and see kind of what you're talking about with a little bit more of the playmaking spot out of the four that can work with Towns, that can get him the ball. But yeah, I'd love it, and it's just going to come down to, I think, if teams believe in his health or not. And I think with Robbie Sicka and a lot of the different, you know, really smart people that the Wolves have in the building on the medical side of things, I think, you know, I think they'll do their homework and wouldn't be surprised to see them pull the trigger.
Yeah, for sure. So the next pairing is Jamias Ramsey from Texas Tech and Jared Butler from Baylor. These are two guys that I hadn't really seen a ton of. Like I researched a fair bit last night, and I kind of tried to shape up a little bit on them, but I'm not, I guess I'm still going on a bit of a preliminary reading on those guys, so that's a bit of a forewarning. But for you, who did you pick between those two guys?
So I picked Jared Butler, and the reason why I picked Jared Butler is because ultimately I think that he's going to be a really good on-ball defender once he kind of gets in an NBA strength and conditioning program and can just add a little bit more, you know, muscle onto his frame, because he's really not that big. I think he's only like 6'3 and 190 pounds. And obviously, if you're going to be playing point guard, you're going to really need to bulk up, probably closer to the 205 range. I mean, if he got up to 205 in muscle, I think that he would be a problem on the defensive side of the floor for a lot of opposing teams, just because he has all out hustle. He moves really well laterally. His timing is incredible. And just some of the instincts and vision he has on the defensive side of the floor are really special. And not to mention, you know, he's a very, very good 3-point shooter, and very consistent, might I add as well, just because, you know, he's shot 36.7% from his career, but on high volume. He shot 38% on almost 7 attempts per game this year at Baylor. And just love everything about Jared Butler as a player. I think he struggles to finish around the rim a little bit, and I think some of that has to do with his frame. And just that I think he's got to get a little bit better body control when he's in the air. I don't really think he shies away from contact much, but but I think just needs to do a better job of, I guess, of practicing getting hit and adjusting in the air, which can be tough for guys at the college level, I think, especially if they didn't have to do it a ton at the high school level. And with Jamias Ramsey, you know, I think he's going to be a really good isolation scorer at the next level. I don't know how efficient he's going to be, but I do buy his catch and shoot, catch and shoot abilities. He's a good off ball player in the sense of getting into his spots and getting good looks from three. And he's really dynamic in transition too. But he at times, you know, his shot selection is a bit poor. And we saw that with Culver too, just because I think those guys were very clearly the number one options in their respective years at Texas Tech. But yeah, I think that the Jamias Ramsey has some upside as a playmaker too. He's a really good ball handler, and could probably be a secondary creator, or potentially run the bench offense if you need it, depending on who's out on the floor with him. But yeah, I would take Butler and pretty comfortably.
Yeah, see, I actually, of course, like I said before, I haven't watched enough of these guys where I'm really confident like I am with most other guys, but I took Ramsey just pretty much based on the size advantage. I thought watching both of them, I wasn't really inspired, you know, by their shot creation, slashing, or I guess ability to be like a plus playmaker at the next level, but I think I was pretty happy to see that both of them were very good shooters, I thought. I thought Butler was a better shooter, but I think Ramsey, just at his 6 foot size, 6 foot four size, 6'10" wingspan, which is really big for a guy who's probably an undersized two. Like, I don't think he's
right.
I don't think he's a pure point guard.
He's rangy too.
Yeah, and I think that I don't think right now he's a better defender than Butler. I mean, I definitely don't think that, but I think at the NBA level, you know, that when they both get that kind of training and sharpening up their skills as a defender, I think that 6'10" wingspan could potentially make him into a better defender and just give him a bit more versatility, you know, able to guard ones or twos and then still be an above average shot maker. I think he's got a really smooth looking stroke. I noticed some off movement shooting as well, which is pretty encouraging. Ranked in the 91st percentile in catch and shoots, like you said before. Only 32nd percentile off the dribble, so not a great shot creator, like I said, but I think just based on, I don't know, I kind of couldn't separate them enough where I was really confident taking one guy, so I went with Ramsey just because I think that size kind of helps him slot into more teams, and especially Minnesota, where he could probably play the two and maybe even a little bit of pseudo point guard.
Yeah, the one thing I wanted to notice is that I didn't see Ramsey having a 6'10" wingspan anywhere, but it was on the Stepien, where
I saw it, which are normally pretty reliable, but they said rumored, so it's obviously not confirmed, okay. but they are guys who don't often, you know, report things if they're not true.
The number that I had was like 6'6" or 6'7", but
and that's a big difference.
If it,
like,
yeah, yeah, and huge. So the thing that I was going to mention just too about Jamias Ramsey is that I think his ceiling is higher than Butler's, and I don't really think there's any arguing that. But I think that Butler has a pretty good floor for a guy that you'd take, you know, in the second round. And I think Jamias Ramsey will probably end up being a first round pick.
Yeah, and I don't love him, you know, like, I don't think I'd take him in the first round if I was a GM of a team, but, you know, maybe an early second. I think both of them are probably early second rounders.
Yeah, and I think Jamias Ramsey, too, the problem that I had with him, I guess, is that he just doesn't lock in on the defensive end of the floor. He's had shades of being a really good on-ball defender, and you know, also when he's paying attention and is really locked in, can jump into passing lanes and fly around on defense and just blow up plays, which is obviously something that you'd love to see, but just didn't do it consistently. And if he's a guy that's going to buy in and do that at the next level, I'd get really excited about his prospect, or about him as a prospect and his, you know, potential fit on the Wolves. I think comes down to how much he could lock in on defense, and then if his, you know, 43% three-point shooting can continue at the next level.
Yeah, sure. I don't think I'd be thrilled if either of these guys ended up on Minnesota, but I also, you know, I'm struggling to split hairs between them because I think there's both good things and bad things that they both do. The point you make about Ramsey's defense is definitely true. I mean, he's very inconsistent defensively.
It's pretty evident when you start watching.
Yeah, and just for both of them, just the struggling to get to the rim is such a big thing for a point guard.
Yeah,
you know, if you're going to play point guard, you need to be able to get to the rim or at least have that really nice, you know, baby runner. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and Ramsey's a pretty explosive athlete, especially in the open floor. And so I'd hope that, you know, if he can, I mean, he's already a pretty good ball handler as it is, in my opinion, for a guy who isn't really a true point guard. But, you know, it kind of comes back to like the Wiggins thing where like Wiggins couldn't always super effectively utilize his really quick first step because his ball handling wasn't there.
Yeah.
And just didn't really allow him to be quite as explosive. And I think if Ramsey can tighten up his handle, I think he'd be much more effective off the dribble trying to get down to the rim. So it'll just be interesting to see how he develops because he could end up being, you know, one of the 5-6 best players in this draft if he reaches his ceiling. But I don't trust that he's going to reach that ceiling. But we'll see.
Yeah, I do agree with all of you with all your points there. I'm kind of torn between those two guys. Pairing number three. I think I know your answer for this one. So, Cassius.
Oh, yes, you do.
Cassius Stanley or Jaden McDaniels?
So this one is fun for me because I picked Cassius Stanley, and Cassius Stanley is probably one of my 10 favorite prospects in the draft.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that he's in my top 10, but I would like if I were an NBA GM, I would take Cassius Stanley with a mid first round pick. And he's not being mocked even remotely close to that. He's generally being mocked like, I don't know, like the high 30s, low 40s. But I just think he has so many directly translatable skills that would just, I think, make him a surefire safe bet at the NBA level. He has a 46.5-inch vertical, which would already be the highest vertical in the NBA, or tied with Zach LaVine. So his athleticism is insane. He broke all of Zion's athleticism records at Duke this past year. And he's a really, really good perimeter shooter. I love his stroke. It's something that, you know, I think he'll have no issue adjusting to the NBA range, and he would instantly be one of the best players in the NBA in transition. He's really smart. Decision maker, knows when to dump it off to teammates, knows when to go throw up the lobs, space out on the perimeter and kind of fly out to the corners for threes. And just his downhill driving and attacking ability, like we were just talking about with Ramsey, I think once he becomes a little bit better ball handler, I don't think he'll have any issue whatsoever getting to the rim and finishing through and over defenders. I'm a little down in his ball handling as it is right now, but again, that's something that I think it's a good weakness to have if you're going to have any, because it's something that you can correct by just simply getting in the gym and working on it. It's not like a mental thing or anything like that. And Cassius Stanley is a great dude too. So I picked him, and with Jaden McDaniels, like, so with my job, I work in marketing, for Prep Hoops, which is a scouting service that covers high school basketball across the country. And so I've seen quite a bit of Jaden McDaniels play as he's come up, and ended up watching him a lot at Washington between, you know, watching games that that I'd bet on or watching, you know, my good friend Tyrell Terry play, and wanting to see what's going on in the Pac-12. Saw a lot of him play. He should have been a top 5 pick in this year's draft.
Yeah.
His talent is that good and his ceiling is that high. But he's just one of those guys where his work ethic is not there. There's huge mental red flags in the sense that he does not lock in, and he has a lot of maturity issues. And it's evident because he pouts and complains constantly when he gets called for fouls. He'll get technical fouls just for yelling at the refs, and he'll tune out of games if he gets in foul trouble early. And you can tell that Mike Hopkins just really struggled with trying to get him to buy in constantly. And when he was locked in on defense, the flashes were insane. Like, I'm talking all defensive potential.
Yeah.
On defense is,
and he's 6 foot ten with a 7 foot wingspan, and he's, you know, a small, and he's a small forward. So like,
and he moves as gracefully as any guy that large that I've ever seen.
Yeah, but the bad just outweighs the good by so far.
Yeah, and they're just like, you can't even really truly consider him to draft him as a prospect if, you know, he's got all these red flags. Like, he's a really good perimeter shooter. He's an incredible ball handler and playmaker for a guy his size, and would probably be the best defensive weapon, maybe besides, you know, James Wiseman in this draft. Or Onyeka Okongwu in this draft if he brought it on every play in every game, but he just doesn't. And because of that, I'd rather have Cassius Stanley. Like, obviously the ceiling is better with McDaniels, but you know, I'm really intrigued by Stanley as a prospect, and think he's going to be a huge steal if he slips to 40 something or 33. Like, I would buy a pick to go get Cassius Stanley.
Yeah, I literally agree with you on every point there. Like, Jaden McDaniels is probably the biggest wild card, you know, from not even from game to game, but from possession to possession. Like, one play, he'll make a crisp rotation, you know, swat the ball off the backboard, take the rebound, and you know, Giselle up the court and score. And then the next three plays, he'll fall asleep on defense. He'll jack up a contested mid-range, you know, off one dribble when he has an open guy in the corner. He's just an absolute roller coaster of emotions. I mean, I loved watching him just because it's so, like, entertaining to watch a guy who you just have no idea what he's going to do. But I'm not a Washington fan. If he was playing for Minnesota, I don't think I'd love watching him, just because that's not the kind of player I think you want on your team, even in a minor role. I think he maybe those maturity issues, which are very true, maybe they fix themselves as he gets older. I mean, he's obviously still a young dude, but it's going to have to go a long way for that to become enough to I guess, suck the most out of his potential. But maybe, I mean, in the late first round, I don't think he's a good pick. In the mid-second round, that's when I think Jaden McDaniels is the kind of pick you want. But
It's just crazy to me to sit here, like, knowing how incredible of a player he is when he's locked in.
Yeah, and to be thinking, like, he's a good pick in the second round.
Is just crazy. It's just crazy. Like, it's not completely out of the realm of, like, good takes or like, sensibility. But, man, it's just, like, I've seen him play since he was a sophomore in high school. As just, like, an otherworldly high school talent. And it just blows my mind that he's let himself slip to be considered where he is now. It's wild to me.
So I chose Stanley.
Wish he can put it together. Like, I hope he goes to, like, Miami or Boston or Denver or some place like that where they can turn him around.
Yeah, I think he needs to be in the G League for a stint. You know, at least to, if he's not going to sharpen up his maturity, at least sharpen up his actual, you know, awareness and decision making. He's one of the worst decision makers, I think, in the class, which, you know, doesn't go hand in hand with his actual skill set.
Yeah, and I think from the sense of, like, reading the game and getting up to the speed of an NBA game, I think it would be great for him to be in the G League. But part of me also says I think he should really be with the NBA team, because I think being around guys that are going to really challenge him as a dude, not just as a player, but as a dude. Like, if you put Jaden McDaniels with Jimmy Butler in Miami or around that infrastructure, you know, like, there's a chance he, like, might not even be with the team by, like, the time the next season kicks off. But, like, if it worked, it would be one hell of a bet that they would be making.
So, yeah, exactly. And so I chose Stanley, like, for all those reasons. I mean, I think Stanley, that eye-popping athleticism, you know, 6'6", better-looking jumper, and more accurate than McDaniels. I mean, I think he has the ability to be a really solid defensive wing as well. He kind of strikes me as one of those 3-and-D guys out of the second round who tend to stick around for a long time, especially with his athleticism and the way he'll be able to punish teams in transition and, you know, off hard closeouts and straight-line drives. I think that's the kind of player who sticks around for a long time, even if he's not the kind of player who has this, you know, mouth-watering potential, and everyone sees as a guy who could be a star in a few years. But I think he's definitely a star in your role type player, and I can see him, yeah, like I said, being a 3-and-D, you know, a really athletic 3-and-D kind of guy for 10 plus years. And if you're getting that at, you know, in Minnesota's case, at pick 33, I think you've done pretty well, because by the second round in this draft, you know, you might be pretty hit and miss. Well, the second round of all drafts, you're pretty hit and miss whether you're even getting a rotation level player. So I'd definitely be happy with Stanley at 33. I think I'd probably be happy with McDaniels at 33, just because, like, this team just needs to take chances, but I don't have that much faith that he's going to work out. So I definitely would rather Stanley.
And the other thing too is, like, kind of retaking chances. Like, you can't just draft a bunch of, or pick up a bunch of Naz Reads. And that's not to slight Naz Reed, but it's just that, you know, I don't think this team, especially considering the extenuating circumstances of the potential sale of the team, the margin of error has shrunk significantly.
Yeah.
And they don't have the time to just sit around and wait and try and just wait for all these guys to develop. Like, I love, you know, Sam Newman back and what they've been doing in Iowa, but you just wonder how, like, what the timeline is going to be there. And how that's going to play out. But so we got a couple of point guards next.
Yeah, so we hadn't discussed our answers, but we were kind of having a little discussion before, and these two guys are, like, harsh because they're obviously different players, but these guys, two guys, are pretty much two of the most similar players you could imagine coming out of the draft, and that is Michigan State's Cassius Winston and Malachi Flynn.
Why don't you go first?
Yeah, here? I think they. I went with Flynn. I really like Cassius Winston. I spoke about him with Tyler Metcalf a few weeks ago, but it's because they remind me so much of each other, and their strengths and weaknesses are so similar. I went with Flynn just because he's 2 years younger, pretty much, like, more room to develop. I think they're both electric in the pick and roll. Both electric in the pick and roll, both really good passers and scorers, pull-up shooters, both very undersized, 6'1", under 200 pounds. I think they have really high defensive IQs, but don't have the size or the strength to be a positive on that end. So I think they'll probably be hunted pretty consistently, both guys in the NBA as a defender, but yeah, in the end of the day, I chose Flynn just because I think he is 2 years younger, and I think he probably has a little bit more room to develop in both game and body. I mean, he's a great pick and roll passer. He's so fun as a pick and roll passer. I don't think he's quite the pull up shooter that Cassius Winston is, who, like, Cash yeah, might have been the best pull up shooter in the country this season, and that's not even, you know.
No, that's not everyone. Yeah. I think when you're looking at those two, the trade-off is, would you rather have Cassius Winston's pull-up abilities, especially in the mid-range and the pick-and-roll against, like, a drop defense, or would you rather have, you know, Malachi Flynn's ability to move without the ball and catch and shoot in a variety of ways, off screens or off handoffs, yeah, and all these different things? I think he's a more dynamic shot maker, kind of he's a more dynamic shot maker on shots that are not off the dribble, whereas Cassius Winston is better on the dribble. And I chose Flynn as well. And part of the reason why I chose Flynn is because I think his ability to get to the rim and finish is, for me, projects probably a little bit higher than Winston's, just because he's really creative with the ball. And he's a really good ball handler. And then, too, just throw on top of the fact that he might be the best pick and roll playmaker in the draft. He looks so comfortable in it, and he always makes the right reads, and his teammates are always in the right spots for him, or when his teammates are in the right spots, he hits them without fail every single time.
Yeah.
It's especially for a guy that played on a team that didn't really get a whole lot of love. I think that, you know, his ability to just put his head down and do everything that was asked of him was was really sensational. And just to throw a couple numbers at you, the pick and roll playmaking that he had, he was 98 or 96th percentile as a PNR ball handler, and in pick and rolls, including passes that he made, 401 possessions, so an absolutely enormous sample size. 51.2% field goal percentage for him and his teammates, and 61.6% effective field goal percentage, and they scored 50% of the time. That's insane. He was in the 97th percentile there, and those are numbers, especially on that huge of a sample size, that I just trust wholly going into the NBA. And especially, you know, if you're talking about fit on the Timberwolves with a guy like Karl Anthony Towns, I think that his ability to get Cat the ball in a variety of different ways in the pick and roll would be incredibly valuable.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, like you said, that he's a really good off-ball mover. Not going to light the world on fire as a shooter, but definitely a respectable shooter and should be able to play off the ball a little bit with Russell. You know, if you're playing a two-point guard lineup, I think he could play on the ball as a pick-and-roll player and definitely facilitate Russell and kind of maximize his off-ball ability. But then when Russell, you know, inevitably needs the ball in his hands himself, I'd have no problem with Flynn playing off the ball on offense. I mean, that lineup on defense, I think, would be pretty bad, but it's going to be pretty bad, I think, with Flynn or Russell. Yeah, either way. So I think, you know, pretty good kind of combo point guard, guy who can play off the bench, who can play, you know, spot minutes as a starter. Just a fun player as well. Like, he's the guy and kind of guy who I just think, if he ended up in Minnesota or Cassius Winston, you know, to be fair, I think they're the...
And Cassius is already interviewed with the
team. Yeah. And I think they'd be guys who instantly become fan favorites. I mean, they're the kind of guy you overlook their defense just because you have so much fun watching them manipulate pick and rolls and, you know, hit threes, hit pull-up jumpers. It's a lot of fun to watch either of these guys.
And they're, just really, really smart,
yeah,
too. And the thing with Flynn, too, is that I think that he would be really, really interesting off the ball with a guy like Russell to see what, because we saw a little bit of what he could do off the ball at San Diego State, but just seeing exactly how good he could be with an incredible passer like Russell would be something that would be a ton of fun for me, just as like a basketball fan, not even just a Wolves guy, but just a basketball fan would be so fun to see and watch.
And especially,
so I kind of selfishly hope that
happens. Yeah, and especially in a system that's really, you know, designed to get open threes and to spread the floor and let the big, you know, like let Towns kind of go to work, but also have shooters around him and have guys moving off screens to try and get open threes. Like, that seems to be the thing that could really maximize his ability as an off-ball player.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's close, but I think given where the Timberwolves are and kind of how their offense is going to work with spacing, I think I'd rather have a more dynamic off the ball player.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, that 2 years younger is still a big thing for me. I mean, I'm not a big subscriber to age is everything. Like, I'm happy to pick a senior, you know, in the first round if I think he's going to.
But when it's that close.
Yeah, exactly. When you're splitting hairs, like, to, you know, 20-year-old to a 22-year-old is. That's a lot of development that you could potentially, you know, cram in those 2 years. And maybe by the time he's Winston's age, he's a much better player.
Yeah, exactly. And, Yeah, I mean, and granted, like, Malachi Flynn is only a junior, too, so...
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, like...
Yeah, so we'll get into the next two guys if you want, which is another two-point guards. These guys probably more late first-round picks rather than the second-round picks that Flynn and Winston were. But Minnesota native, and I'm sure, you know, fan favorite of the podcast is Trey Jones versus Nico Mannion. I went with Jones, not just because he's from Minnesota, but because I think, well, a lot of these guys have been similar players. These two are pretty much polar opposites. I mean, Mannion is a decent pick and roll playmaker, but quite good on his day, and pull-up shooter, who I think is really, really good at, like, relocating off the ball and finding open pockets of space to shoot from. But I think Jones is... I think he'll develop enough where he's enough of a neutral or, you know, slight positive on offense to really allow his defensive expertise to shine. And he's a hounding point guard defender. He might have to claim, you know, for the best point guard defender in the class.
Yeah, I think he does. I think
And he's smart like his brother, but with more physicality, truly, truly elite technique. I mean, he's 6'3" or 6'2.5" and 185 pounds, which is a genuine concern. But and it'll probably limit him to just being a one position defender. But I don't think it'll stop him from being a real plus on the defensive end. I think he's a ball hawk. He can, you know, guard you straight up and defend you without getting the hands in there. He's a crisp off the ball rotator. I mean, he's just seems to have it defensively. You know, he's just one of them guys. Like Tyus has that exceptional IQ on offense, and I don't mean to compare the two, but like Tyus has that exceptional IQ offensively. That's kind of just an innate ability to know what's going on. I think Trey has that defensively, and that's for Minnesota especially. That could be a really handy guy to have backing up D'Angelo Russell, just because obviously Russell struggles on defense, and putting a great defender, a great point guard defender like Trey Jones into pick and roll could really allow Towns or even Naz Reid, if it's with the second unit, to flourish as a pick and roll defender, because it takes so much pressure off those guys. And then, I mean, he's not great offensively, Jones. I don't think he's horrible, but he's pretty small, and he's not really bursty enough to be a good finisher around the rim. He isn't really any danger of beating guys with his pull-up game. But I think this is a strange stat that I kind of pulled up, which he shot 21% on his 19 guarded catch-and-shoot jumpers, so...
But his unguarded catch and shoot numbers, he was like 95.
Yeah, so that's 12th percentile. And then he hit 51.6 of his 31 unguarded attempts. So low volume still, but I have some optimism that he can at least be a decent catch and shoot guy. He's definitely not a guy that the ball, you know, sticks in his hands. So I don't think he's the kind of guy who would completely tank an offense. I just don't think he's ever going to be a really good offensive player, or even a plus-plus defensive player. But if he can be a neutral and combine that with his ability to really lock down on point guards, then I still spy a good player.
Yeah, I also took Trey Jones here, and that's partly because I am not a believer in Nico Mannion at the next level, really. And the reason for that is because I just don't think that Nico Mannion is strong enough or athletic enough to be quite as good of a PNR player as he was at Arizona. He was really, really good manipulating ball screens and angles and finding pockets of space. Like you said, it was funny. I had almost the same thing written down. But the thing is I just really don't trust his perimeter jump shot. I don't like his form, you know, is just a little too hunched for me. I just don't buy that. It's just really a lot more difficult when you have to use more of your legs when you're shooting from, you know, further away and you're hunched over like that, especially trying to shoot over much bigger and athletic defenders. I think he's really going to struggle to create his own shot. And just don't think he's quite as good of a passer to a point where that's going to be able to make up for his lack of, you know, his lack of being a threat to score. Yeah. And And with Trey, I think that Trey is showtime. Like, he's been around really, really great players. He played with Cam Reddish and RJ Barrett, Zion. He knows exactly how to get the ball to guys in their spots. And he also knows when to pick his own spots and try and pull up and shoot and attack the basket. But the biggest worry that I have about Trey is not his jump shot, because I think that it got a lot better from year one to year two at Duke. Yeah. And, you know, just even the fact that he shot, you know, whatever he shot from three, shot 36% from three this year, was just a lot more encouraging to me. I, you know, as a guy who, you know, he was, the guys would leave him open and just say, you know, we'll take our chances, go ahead and shoot. Last year to now being an 89th percentile in spot ups, I think was a huge jump for him. And then obviously the, you know, the ball security is another great thing. He's always been a great, like Tyus, great assist to turnover ratio guy. And like you said, the on ball defense. But the other thing too, that I think is important, with Trey is his leadership. You never hear anybody say a bad word about Trey and Coach K. I think Coach K would trust Trey Jones with his life. Yeah. And just the relationship that those two have, I think speaks volumes just about Trey, the guy. And that matters a ton, I think. And especially when you're a point guard and you're a young guy trying to come into the league and you're more of a facilitator than a scorer.
And you're on a team, if it was Minnesota, that's full of young guys. You don't want a negative personality coming in and kind of shaking things up. Like, I think he'd be
a great friend and
teammate for those guys.
Yeah, and that's not to take anything away from Nico Mannion. Like, I'm not saying, like, Nico Mannion isn't a good dude. But, like, Trey Jones, like, his leadership is a legit strength and skill of his. Yeah. And I think that's important, too, because he knows his role. He knows that, you know, he's going to play around guys that are much more, you know, potent threats offensively, whether it be shooting or attacking the basket. And he knows that, and he studies his own players, his own teammates, and figures out what's the best way I can get this guy the ball in his spot at this time. And you know, if he can develop a jump shot that's like Tyus, like same thing, like if he can shoot 35% from three, that's a huge win. And that'll keep him on the floor, like you said, because I think he's such a plus defensive guy. And it's again where the leadership comes into play. I mean, it's like Bill Raftery says, you know, get those puppies in order. Trey Jones gets those puppies in order. He, you know, is an awesome, unreal point of attack defender, incredible at changing, you know, at flipping his hips and keeping guys in front of him and turning ball handlers, forcing them to change direction, which I think is huge. And that's something that, you know, I fully expect to continue. I kind of see a little bit of D'Anthony Melton in Trey Jones. Yeah. You know, they're kind of similar in frame, like 6'2", 190. You know, Melton's probably a bit more of an off-ball threat on defense just because he's got a 6'8 wingspan, whereas Trey Jones is closer to 6'4". But just the way that they hound the hell out of guys on defense is something that's really cool to see. And if Trey can have, you know, a similar type of impact as D'Anthony Melton has had this year for Memphis, I think you're talking about a guy that's going to be in the league for a long, long time. And so just because of that, I think Trey's floor is higher. I don't think his ceiling is crazy high, but, you know, similar to Tyus, a guy that you just genuinely really feel comfortable about having on your basketball
team. Yeah, exactly. I think both of these guys, yeah, like I said earlier, are probably late first rounders. Trey might slip. I think if Trey slips to 33, they'll definitely consider taking him just because. Not to say, you know, a kind of in a nepotism country club way, but the fact he's from Minnesota, the fact that he provides that defensive spark that they clearly need, especially from the guard position. And then I think definite potential to at least become a decent scorer, a guy who keeps things ticking over, pretty good playmaker, or at least, you know, like I said earlier, not a guy with sticky hands, a guy who just knows when to make the right pass. He might not have quite the passing IQ that say Tyus does, but he does the right things. He's a low turnover guy, like you said, just a guy who really gets basketball, and it's an underrated skill these days, is guys who just know how to play basketball really well. It's the reason why Brandon Clark slipped so far because everyone looked at age and three-point shot and, you know, what he couldn't do, rather than just looking at the fact that he was just an awesome college player. And awesome players don't often get not awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, too, that, like, being around Tyus, I think, helped. He's always played up. He started as a freshman at Apple Valley, or he started as an eighth grader at Apple Valley playing varsity. Or didn't start, but started playing varsity basketball as an eighth grader. And just, like, his exposure to being around guys like that, like, being around Howard Pulley guys, which is a really, really dominant AAU team here in the Minneapolis area. And just being, even like when I was in high school, like being around guys like Jarvis Johnson and Geno Crandall and playing against those guys, I think was huge in his development as a player. And obviously playing around Tyus and his friends and even being around a guy like Jimmy Butler, because him and Tyus were really close. Yeah. And like, there's hilarious post-game interviews that Jimmy's given of where like all of his answers were related to Trey Jones in some way, because they went to you know, a Trey Jones game at a breakdown event at Hopkins or something like that. But yeah, too, I think I would watch out for Trey Jones going to the Lakers. I think that's kind of or maybe even the Heat. I think that's kind of a sneaky,
yeah,
like two fits that would just be unreal. Like, Goran Dragic is probably going to be leaving Miami this offseason. Wouldn't be surprised if Rondo doesn't come back, even though, you know, obviously he's got ties there with LeBron. Like, I think it'd be interesting. And I do agree with you completely that if he's there at 33, that Rosas would take a good, hard, long look at him, just because I think the Wolves are going to draft a point guard this year.
Yeah, I do too.
Or bring a guy in as an undrafted free agent at some point. Like, I don't know. I don't think they're married to Jordan McLaughlin as much as, you know, we love him.
Yeah.
And I think he should be the starting or the backup point guard next year. But I do think with the way that the Wolves are going to play and deploy D'Angelo Russell, that they're going to need a third point guard. And I think Trey would be great. You know, he obviously has played with a bunch of NBA caliber athletes, in transition, like Zion and Cam Reddish, and his ability to play make in transition, I think, you know, in a more of a NBA style game has been huge. And he's always been around big time guys and has always been able to make everybody around him better. And hopefully he can do that at the next level, because if he can, you know, it'd be fun to have another Jones brother stick in the NBA. Yeah. So
yeah, for sure. So last pairing, this is one that I'm really interested to see your thoughts on, just because this is one of the ones that I struggle to split the most, I think. But Paul Reed from DePaul or Maryland's Jalen Smith, who you got, Jack?
So this one, I agree, is tough. And the reason why I think it's tough is because ultimately I think they're very different players,
but
like have just really interesting impacts. So I think that Jalen Smith, I think he's going to be a really good interior rim presence, on defense, or interior rim defender on defense. Average 2.4 blocks, 0.7 steals, like really, really smart defensive player with his timing, and just didn't commit a lot of stupid fouls, which I appreciated. Like, he only averaged 3 fouls a game. And I think if you're only averaging 3 fouls a game, but you're averaging 2.5 blocks, I think that speaks to just the defensive discipline and verticality that you have, rather than wanting to foul a guy and, you know, just constantly swinging
arms.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And you see that a lot.
Especially with guys that get blocks too. You see that a lot too, or guys that just like get really frustrated when they get called for fouls, and you know, that's just not really something that you see with Jalen Smith. I think he's interesting, really, really interesting offensively. Another guy that's kind of like a synergy superstar.
Yeah.
Just because he was so that, I mean, that offense was just so much better with him on the floor than with him off the floor. And what was really interesting to me was how good of a transition guy he was, running in transition, like rim running in transition. And especially if, you know, he'd switched out onto a guard or a wing on the perimeter, which he can do, to be able to then just realize that he doesn't need to go back and get the rebound and just fly up the court, I thought was really, really interesting. And also projects to be a really pretty good three-point shooter and face-up player. You know, I don't really buy his post offense that much in the NBA, just because I don't think he was really great at throwing his weight around offensively. But definitely a guy that can knock down an open jump shot either from the mid-range or from beyond the arc. And someone that I think would be a really interesting guy to pair with Karl Anthony Towns, just because of his interior defensive presence and his ability to play on the perimeter, I think would be interesting. This 84th percentile in catch and shoot opportunities, on defense was in the 84th percentile on catch and shoot opportunities. And I think that's important because in a more spaced out offense in the NBA, being able to contest and do it without fouling and without getting, you know, shot faked and blown by, I think is really key. And for a guy of his size to be able to do that was really great. And think that he would be just a really solid contributor from the jump. And as he continues to kind of develop his skills from a ball handling perspective and a passing perspective too, is only going to get better in my opinion. But I'm going to go with Paul Reed here. And the reason I'm going to go with Paul Reed is because, his overall defensive versatility, I think, is insane. I think outside of maybe Devin Vassell and then Jaden McDaniels, he's the most versatile defender in the draft. Just absolute, you know, blow up the play type of guy that's really smart on the back end of the defense. 2.7 blocks and 2 steals a game, 4.5 stocks is pretty nuts. For a guy that's 6'9", 220, and obviously, really, really athletic too, which is just a lot of fun to watch in the defensive end. For him, it's all going to come down to whether or not that shot's going to translate. I personally think it will. I think that his touch is actually pretty decent and that his jump shot will continue to get better. I think, it helps when you shoot 74% for your career, albeit on a low volume. He only shot 200 free throws in his career at DePaul, but really was able to carry that DePaul team defensively for stretches and keep them in the game. And I'm a little more biased in the sense that whether the Wolves are going to take a more offensively centric four or defensively centric four, I'm not sure, but I sure as hell hope it's a defensive one. And as far as defensive ones go, like, Paul Reed's got to be up there. Like, I would take a good hard look at Paul Reed if they end up keeping the 16th pick, and just think that he would be, in my opinion, like a perfect guy to put next to Cat, especially defensively.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you said, but I went on the side of Smith. I mean, I think I'm probably as high on Smith as maybe anyone. I think he's probably like a mid first rounder, maybe, early 20s.
I agree. They're right in that range.
Yeah, I think I have Reed a little bit lower just because I'm not sure I buy Reed's shot like you do. I think his form kind of scares me. It's a little bit funky. I think his shot selection at times wasn't great. Like, I mean, I think he took too many jumpers with a hand in his face, which I guess it's just him, trying to expand his game.
Too much.
And he's such a fun defender. I mean, there's no denying that. Like, Paul Reed is, the way he can get into passing lanes, the way he, sticks his arm in on entry passes, on post-ups, is one of the most unique, steals I think that anyone has in this class. Where he just seems to come away with so many steals when he's just being posted up, and it's a decent entry pass, and he kind of just, throws that 7'2 wingspan in there and comes away with it. I think he's more athletic than Smith, but I don't think Smith lacks in athleticism at all. Like you said, he...
100%. They can both defend on the...
Yeah, and they both really work hard in transition on offense. They get up the floor, a lot of putbacks, when guards get out on the break and miss a layup or get contested, they're always there to clean things up. I just think it's the shooting, and I think maybe a little bit more defensive discipline from Smith. I think Reed's highs are definitely higher, and I think with a bit longer wingspan and probably a little bit more vertically athletic, he can get and recover some more balls. But I think Smith is a better positional defender at the moment, and I think he's definitely a better shooter, and I really see him translating into a kind of stretch big who can defend the rim in that kind of unicorn light kind of mold. And that's a really fun player in my opinion. I think he's a player that you could definitely sit next to Towns, good recover, you know, a guy who can recover for Townsend's mistakes on the backside. Paul Reed could do that as well. I mean, I had trouble splitting these two, but I just think I like what Smith does a little bit more.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I think Smith's going to be a really good center, like a really good modern center in the NBA, just because I think his shot's only going to get better. And I think, you know, I'm much more sold on Smith's jump shot than I am on Paul Reed's. And kind of it's weird how, like, his hand almost, like, pushes off to the side, kind of, with his shot. He has kind of, like, a weird hitch, like Culver. It's definitely not as pronounced as Culver's is, so don't get totally scared when you hear me say that, but like I don't think that Paul Reed's shot is like that. Like, would you agree that it's kind of similar to Culver's with that the little like hitch at the end, but I think it's so much closer to being really good.
I think it's more wrist movement rather than that hitch. Like Culver's is kind of like a hitch in the middle of it, whereas Reed kind of tends to flick his wrist almost the wrong way, which is probably fairly correctable.
Yeah, which I would hope so. And I don't know. I just think that, and I guess part of the reason why I chose Paul Reed is because I think that Paul Reed is probably, like, the chances that the Timberwolves would draft a guy like Paul Reed, I think, are a lot higher than they would that they would draft a guy like Jalen Smith.
For sure.
And I just think that Paul Reed is the type of kid that can absolutely swing a game with his defensive impact and presence. And his instincts and timing and hands, especially blowing up pick and rolls or switching on to ball handlers, like there'd be times where like he would hedge so hard that like the ball handler would be sideways.
And he's just such a huge presence. And then he would, like, when he hedges like that, he just like swallows up everything around him.
And he's so good at like swiping at the ball while he's hedging, and then kind of slinking around or kind of angling his body around the, you know, initial ball handler to get a steal and then just run out in transition. He's like a freak athlete too. Like there are some of his dunks just kind of like I had Fox Sports 1 obviously and would be able to watch a lot of Big East games like on Thursday, Friday nights and on Saturdays, and you know, like there are times where it's just like the guy just totally sticks out on the screen and it just kind of like gets you out of your seat, just excited at what he's doing. And and it's not to say that Jalen Smith doesn't have that as well. I think that it's just that like Paul Reed stuck out to me more and just like, I don't know, I guess I'm more interested in like the like Paul Reed highlight, the like his ceiling, I guess.
Yeah.
I just like draws me more to Paul Reed than Smith. Smith is just like so fundamentally sound and so solid where like it almost doesn't get you excited. You know what I mean? Like where it's just like so routine and he makes everything look so easy that it just doesn't get you going quite as much as like seeing Paul Reed just like rotate out of nowhere out of the corner on the backside to just smother a dude at the
I think that segues into like that Reed probably has more potential, because if he starts to string those like ridiculous highlights together, you know, if he does like the dunks and the massive backside blocks and the leak out, you know, block a jump shooter and leak out in transition, like if he turns from 3 times a game to 6 times a game, all of a sudden you've got a really, really good player.
Yeah, like you could have an almost more athletic Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
Or like,
and both of them really good in the pick and roll, like especially Reed, just because he can just fly and just grab any sort of pick and roll lob. Like, you just throw the ball up there and he's going to go and collect it.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like, it's so fun for me to watch, and it's something that I think will absolutely translate. And like, I really hope that his aggression on defense and his confidence, like he's so confident on defense. I really hope that translates, because I think, you know, we see guys that are like Jarrett Culver was an awesome defender at Texas Tech last year. And he almost just kind of wasn't as confident in himself because of the offensive struggles.
Yeah.
And I think that was because he was more of a primary offensive option. And with Paul Reed, you know, like Paul Reed, yes, was a key option for DePaul, but like wasn't their, you know, go-to isolation guy when you need a bucket. And because of that, I think you're going to see more of that kind of confidence and swagger from Paul Reed carry over, just because, you know, he's not freaking out about not playing very well offensively, if you will. You kind of know what I mean.
Yeah, I think he knows where his bread is buttered. And that's
exactly,
you know, being a crazy good defender who can chip in on offense and hold his own, and a really, really good rebounder. Yeah. I mean, I think that's one thing.
Right.
That's one thing we hadn't brought up is that he is a really good rebounder, which ties into the size and the ability to jump over guys, but also just a good, like, good boxing out, really has a nose for the ball and really wants to rebound. And I think that's another important thing, especially if he was to be on Minnesota. I mean, You're pulling me towards the Paul Reed side here, just because I'm imagining him, you know, pulling down boards and taking pressure off Cat defensively, and then now the 3-point shot doesn't seem as, you know, important to me, just because maybe if he can hit 32-33% and then really hone in on all those crazy gifts that he has, he could be such a fun prospect.
Yeah, and especially too because, you know, like, Minnesota's already going to have shooters. Like, if he played with, like, D'Lo, Malik, Kat, I mean, those are already three shooters, and then you put in, like, a layman with them or someone like that, that would be a really fun lineup.
Yeah.
For a lot of different reasons. But yeah, too, I think, too, you know, the other aspect of Paul Reed's game that could get unlocked, too, if he develops a somewhat respectable jumper is essentially him just attacking closeouts. With how athletic he is and how much ground he can cover with one dribble, like, he could get one dribble and then dunk all over somebody from anywhere on the perimeter. Which is just, and he's not afraid to do it either, which is sweet. And, like, if Paul Reed was a Timberwolf and Jarrett Vanderbilt also kind of, like, reached his potential or became, like, a key rotational impact guy, and Culver too, like, if those three guys became, you know, somewhat playable, all somewhat playable, you know, rotational guys on the wing. I mean, that's some
long boys.
Yeah, like, long dudes that could just blow shit up on defense, which would be really cool to see. And obviously, like, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself with, like, thinking that Jarrett Culver and Jared Vanderbilt are both going to end up being, like, really good defenders. But, like, and the other thing too, like, back with the rebounding, like, Paul Reed and Kat, I think that's instantly one of the best rebounding front courts in
and
basketball.
Completely changed from this year where they just couldn't, they Wancho just could just not, like, rebound, and they got out rebounded in so many games that kind of, you know, cost them little cheap offensive rebounds that, when they finally did get a stop and then a putback would happen, such momentum killers.
A sneaky, huge weakness that the Timberwolves have.
One of the,
like,
things that
frustrated
me the most watching this team.
Yeah, we're like, you probably don't notice it quite all that much if you're just watching a Timberwolves game here and there, but for all of us that, you know, that watch them every night, it's just so aggravating and can make it so difficult to get back into games if you're down and you need to get stops. Like, the Timberwolves could get stops, but they just couldn't. Like, Kat can't get every rebound.
Yeah.
And Josh Okogie cannot be your two best rebounders. Like, you need to have another interior presence with Kat that's there getting rebounds. And Paul Reed would be really, really fun. I just hope that, you know, the front office isn't really looking for a super offensively centric four, just because thinking that, you know, we can't have two somewhat negative offensive players if we're going to start Josh too.
Yeah. And I think Reed or Smith, like, would be negatives on offense. Maybe not guys who can score 20, but definitely guys who can give you consistent offensive minutes.
Yeah, like, if they just play to their strengths, they don't try and do too much.
The scheme needs to be good around those two guys, I think.
Yeah, but, like, you're going to, in my opinion, I think that you could reasonably expect to get anywhere from 65 to 80 points a night from Kat, D'Lo, and Beasley.
Yeah.
And if you really only then need to string along, you know, 60 points
from the rest of your whole rotation,
anywhere from 45 to 60 points from the rest of your rotation, you throw Layman out there, like, Layman could average 8 points a game. If you had, you know, a guy like if Wancho stuck around, like he could get you 10 in a given
Josh
night.
Can get
like
you 10, Jared can get you 10. You know, like especially with some
right,
some
like you, yeah, like it. Scoring the ball isn't going to be as big of a problem for the Timberwolves, and it's just like I think they just really need to start thinking about who can we get that can help us play defense right away and just like be a star in their role. Yeah. And I like Paul Reed is like top of the list for me there. It's like Devin Vassell and then like Paul Reed is guys that fit perfectly at that kind of four spot where, you know, you can plug them in and things could change right away. Like I think getting those two guys, or Patrick Williams, I should say, would be above Paul Reed, obviously, yeah, for me. But like if you could get two of those three guys in this draft, I would be I would be over the moon. Yeah. It would be pretty incredible. Yeah. So
well, that's the 6 pairings. I mean, they're the kind of later first round, second round guys. Most of those guys, I guess you're either reaching for them at 16 or you're hoping they fall to 33. But we both think that at least one of these picks are going to be traded, so it's still pretty much up in the air. I mean, what have we got, 19 days now until the draft lottery? So that's getting closer. A little bit more news there. We'll probably get into our big board soon, I guess. Like, would that be good for you?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I've still got some work to do.
Yes,
I've still got some work to do with mine, especially kind of as it relates to the back half of the first round. But I'd probably be ready to go with a top 14 or 15 in the next 2 weeks. I'd hope so.
Yeah. Well,
I think it'd be interesting. I'm really interested to see what yours are and just kind of see where our different priorities lie as it relates to that.
Yeah, and they'll obviously be just an in general one rather than one that's completely focused on the fit and how they would slot into Ryan Saunders' system with Minnesota. So I'm really interested to see as well what kind of differences we have, you know, in that respect. But I guess for this show, that's probably about it. Thanks as usual, Jack. You can find Jack on Twitter at is it JRBorman13.
That's correct.
And you should follow him if you don't, or we are not friends. And then I'll see all you guys next week. Thanks again, Jack.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Always a good time, and I'm looking forward to the next time.
Thank you. Yeah. See you later, guys.